That second winner with that filly of hers, I tried to make Elizabeth understand well before the mare dropped the foal how it was too late in the year in our country for something to be born. Too late for the little one to be able to gain enough strength to make it through the winter. How when such a thing happened, it was always best for both the mama and the little one to do away with the baby, to let the mother get back to herself before the cold came, and not prolong the life of the little one, no matter how strong it seemed at birth, for it would fight a painful battle with winter and lose. For the cold is always that much more powerful than the warm, than the fragile heat of life. But no, she absolutely refused to hear of it, refused to even consider what I wanted her to understand, which at the root of it was the very law of the land. Red or someone happened to be around the barn when the mare went down, shaken and all sweated through. She'd begun to tie up, which is something where an animal's muscles all seize up. We finally get a hold of our vet, Stoney, just coming into his dinner, and he comes and goes to work on her, and it seems as if one bad thing follows another. The mare can't really help herself with her hind end all bound up and all, and to top it all off, the baby's going to come breech. Stoney's up inside of her trying to get the foal turned around some, but it's just no damn good, and all the while Elizabeth's kneeling close to the mare's head, rubbing up and down her neck whenever the mare quiets down some, thrashing about with her head, making these god-awful groaning sounds, and then resting back down again. Stoney gets the little one's hind leg started with the smoke rising up off of his arm when he draws back out of her, and Red and I take over for him so he can take a breather, and we sit in the stall with our knees against each other, steadily drawing at the little one's legs. Now we can finally see where it's a filly for sure, but it seems to hang up on something inside of her, and the mare's thrashing and grunting against the thick hay that we'd laid down for bedding. Stoney gets back between us, nudging us off to either side, and reaches back up inside her and gets the one foreleg that was bent straightened back out beneath the foal's chin, and he draws against its soaking hind legs, and then the baby suddenly slides out of her, so he falls backward with the foal lying on top of him. Well, he straightens back up with the baby in his lap and his arms around it, and he just sits there like that. "You all right?" I asked him. And he tells me he wants whatever blood that's left in the placenta to get into the foal before he cuts it loose from the mama. The mare lies back with her head stretched out, and Stoney finally ties off the cord and clasps up the foal and crouches with it into the next stall. Elizabeth brought Stoney a couple of blankets, and he kneels in the corner with a baby curled up beneath him and his arms all around it like before, with his head over his shoulder. And I can still see its lovely little face with its big eyes blinking innocently in the gloom of the barn as if it was thinking to itself, "So this is life. So this is what all the fuss is about." Elizabeth stays with the baby, and Stoney draws off the mare's first milk and tube feeds it into the foal through its nostril to be sure she gets the rest of it into her stomach. It's past 9 o'clock, and I send Red home, for he's got a full day in the morning. I'm damned if I don't have to be down to Cheyenne myself. But the night has just begun, as it turns out. When an animal ties up like that, its kidneys will shut down, which eventually leads to its death. So the only chance is to keep the fluids running into her with the hopes that she'll get to where she's urinating properly, which hopefully would indicate proper kidney function. But then it's still a damn crapshoot. If there's been too much muscle damage, the animal wouldn't be any good for itself anyway. Stoney had come prepared for the long haul when we described to him what was happening over the phone, and he stopped at his office and brought several cases of those electrolyte fluid bags along with a week's supply of milk replacement for the baby. And he gets himself all set up in that stall like he knows that tomorrow's a hell of a long ways off, and he expects to still be there with the mare alongside of him, and that he's bound that they'll both see the morning together. And he sews a catheter tube into her jugular and suspends the first bag from a spike he's nailed to an overhead beam and clips the long clear tube at the mare's neck. And I watch with him for a few minutes as the line of the fluid in the first bag begins to fall. Elizabeth's mixed up a batch of that milk replacement. She's got a bottle of it with a lamb's nipple attached to it, and she's sitting in the next stall with the foal, talking to it and rubbing its forehead, trying to get it interested in what she's got to offer. I kneel down with her and I tell her I'll get the baby started and could she get Stoney some dinner, which reminds me we hadn't had our own yet either, and she goes off. Well, the baby keeps nosing around the nipple in my hand with that wonderful soft skin of the newborn, and I'm setting up against her, mumbling some foolishness in her ear as I watch at her eyes, wide and new, and her eyelashes when she blinks somehow makes me smile. And she finally gets it in her mind to try what's behind the nipple and begins drawing at it with those lovely eyes of hers going back and forth and every now and again looking right at me as she pulls continually on the bottle. Looks to me like she's found herself a daddy. Stoney says, and I look up and he's standing against the open stall with his arms crossed on his chest and a big smile on that mug of his. The mare's quiet. We'll keep the fluids to her as long as it takes. Will she eat anything, I asked him. Oh, she'll nibble some of the grain every now and again, but she's not real interested in it. The baby takes another bottle of the milk substitute and then just puts its chin down on its knee and closes its eyes and goes to sleep. And I move away and close the stall door real quiet-like so as it'll take its rest. We all eat in the runway with Stoney checking on the fluid bags every now and again. He's got three of them strung together hanging there so as it gives us time to eat our dinner. But while we're still at it, there's a thrashing from the baby's stall, and we look in at her just beginning to get her legs. She gets her hind legs under her, nearly locked, and pauses that way, quivering, but every time she goes to rise up off her elbow, she rocks back and falls over. Stoney goes back to the mare, and Elizabeth goes in to feed the foal. She'll do her, I say, standing back and watching, for it's always been a miracle to me, the birth, and then seeing them making themselves stand upright, and soon after, bouncing and jumping around like they'd been practicing their locomotion for months instead of hours. Elizabeth crouches in the corner beside the little thing as it thrashes itself back into the same position, pushing its hind legs a-quivering with its little tail sucked right flat up against its butt. And Elizabeth, she slides her hand open flat under its belly, not barely touching, as it pushes up off its front and starts over again. She supports up under it so that all four legs are now straight and locked. And it hesitates for just a moment, quivering and shaking with its new little muscles that only an hour or so ago had been something to paddle with, and it picks up one foreleg for its first step, but it topples back down again before getting it accomplished. This time its knees buckling under and it falling direct down its face. Don't take very much to learn to fall, Stoney says quietly beside me. But the getting back up again, I say, the will to get back up. Stoney says, for each and every one of us, I reckon. And inside myself, I say, amen. And then again, amen. We get Stoney all fixed up with a pillow and that ancient old quilt that weighs about 12 pounds. And Elizabeth feeds her filly again, which had been sleeping on its side, weary from the far journey it had traveled that evening, all the way from the far inland tide that had cast it up on a violent and fearful beach of soft, dark hay. And then more wondrous than fearful, amid the quiet hours of myriad discovery, where it had found itself not sea creature at all, but something apparently unsuited for its new environment, and at last, precariously, a fragile, tottering, stick-legged thing, with its first hunger sated, and then its first airy dream, no longer of warm and dark and limitless seas, but perhaps of unimagined places its legs, once they walked more harmoniously, might take it. For it had finally walked its first few steps and known already warmth after its first frightening discovery of cold. And it had found again the familiar darkness after its first incomprehensible discovery of light. And it had tasted of something that seemed to quiet the hollow place in its diminutive gut. And there appeared to be many mothers for its choosing. None that slept beside it now, but many kindly mothers nonetheless. Stoney tells Elizabeth that he'll feed the baby through the night as long as he's right there, for she'll no longer have such a luxury after he leaves. And no, she says, she reckons she'll be in that baby stall every 2 hours for the next 3 days, and she'll proceed onward from there until the poor little thing is all ready for weaning. And I concede right then and there that this whole event is going to provide a whole Passover experience for someone. And as I walk back to the house by myself, I figure that I'm probably the one that's about to be re-educated. For Elizabeth, she seems to know just precisely where this whole deal's headed. And I'm damned if she isn't up and down all night long those first few nights. And when the filly can finally go for 4 whole hours at a time, it's almost like a vacation, at least to me and our alarm clock. Like when you get a spate of 20 or 30 below zero weather and it sets in real good and firm some ways after the new year, why a rise up to, say, 5 below zero is near to almost being downright tropical. And a day that makes it all the way to old Zed himself is practically shirt sleeve weather, making you wonder as you leave the house if you really do need your coat or not. And though you still got nearly 5 months to go, you know that spring is absolutely inevitable. And hellfire, a man's hopefulness can just about soar on rosy new wings unfettered. I've already finished shaving, and I'm nearly dressed when the clock goes off for the 6 o'clock feeding. And I tell her that I'll take care of that one, and I'll see her that evening. I guess she'd fixed only some food at 4 o'clock, and as I enter the barn, all is quiet. I creep past the baby's stall, and she is asleep on her side with her legs stretched out straight as if she were dreaming of standing squarely upright. And then I look in at the mare and Stoney, and I'll be damned. The lights over each of the stalls are off, but the ones spaced apart over the runway are still on, and the last dim bulb is opposite the mare's stall so that the baby lies in near darkness, and the dull half-light spreads halfway across Stoney and the mama. He's got the fluid dripping at a slower rate now. And of the 3 most recent bags that hang from the ceiling, she's almost through with the second one. A couple of empty plates are stacked up and pushed off to one side with a fork laid across them. And Stoney is sitting in the bedded hay with his back against the stall partition and his legs out before him and with the mare's face partially across his thigh. He's got the quilt wrapped about his shoulders, but it's nearly fallen off of one side of him. His one arm is lying across the mare's neck, and his face rests on her head, and they're both sound asleep. His other arm is flung back beside him, away from the horse, with the fingers of that hand barely resting on a saucer that holds an empty teacup, as if he had just had the time to set it down before sleep had finally overtaken him in mid-stride, so to speak. All God's creatures, I think to myself as I stand there watching them, and the beauty of it, of the oneness of life. And I'm almost afraid that if I blink, I might disturb them. All God's creatures.